This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng, together with Wong Xiaoning and Sharitz Abdullah. And coming up in about half an hour's time after the 8 a.m. news, we'll have the usual breakfast grill, where I will be speaking to Mark Odell, CEO of the Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, LIAM. Do you know that only about one in three Malaysians have insurance coverage, insurance policy? And Bank Negara wants to get that number up to 75% of the population by 2020. So I'll be speaking about this to Mark Odell as to how the insurance industry can get penetration rates up in Malaysia, as well as InsurTech, how technology is disrupting the insurance industry.
We like our disruptions at BFM.
We absolutely do. All right, let's look at some international news now. UOB Bank has told Bloomberg that it is betting on Southeast Asia, remaining in Southeast Asia in spite of its two other rivals in Singapore, going to Hong Kong and into China. UOB Bank feels that by staying in ASEAN, and this comes as a hedge to that US-China trade war that's going on right now.
Yeah, so we're speaking about 650 million people of population between 10 nations, because that's the sheer size of the combined economy, and that's bigger than India's, and is forecast to be the world's fourth largest by 2030. ASEAN will, has three of the seven fastest growing economy over the next decade. That's based on Standard Chartered's projection.
Now, for expansion in the ASEAN region, the UOB is planning to use digital technology and artificial intelligence rather than acquisitions. And it's rolling out its TMRW digital bank in Thailand, and will introduce it in Vietnam, Indonesia, and possibly Malaysia. They will also add branches selectively in emerging markets. Now, they are going away from the trend of the rest of the Singaporean banks, right? Like OCBC, which is the second largest bank, they spent $5 billion buying Wing Hang Bank in Hong Kong in 2014, and DBS bought Dow Hing Bank in 2001, with both of them trying to grow their business in China, which they see as the largest market in this region. But the UOB takes a different view, and they say that, at the end of the day, they are the third largest bank in Singapore. But in the terms of China bank scale, they are just like a small fish in a big pond, right? Because if you just look at one bank, ICBC, and you look at their market capitalization in Hong Kong dollar terms, they are a 2.2 trillion bank. And UOB, which is much smaller, how can it compete in terms of balance sheet? So maybe their strategy, I think does make some sense.
Yeah, money certainly makes a lot more money with the financial might of some of these Chinese banks. And even the tech companies, the non-bank financial companies are rising right now with Ant Financial, Tencent, having financial licenses to do what is traditionally banking services. This would really push up a competition level. So UOB actually says that I think this is a good strategy to remain in ASEAN, given that ASEAN is such a big economy. It would be a strong contender to the likes of China, India, as well as the United States. But UOB isn't shunning China completely. It's actually going into China directly, expanding its branches over there rather than buying over a local bank, which you would have to spend money on anyway.
Yes, because for example, DBS paid, if I'm not wrong, price to book 3.5 times for Dow Hing in 2001, setting a new record. At that time, moving to China was all the craze.
That was from Hong Leong, right? They bought the bank from Kwek Ling Chan.
Yeah, nothing is ever cheap from Tan Sri Kwek Ling Chan.
And right now, the other Tan Sri, Tee Hong Piao, who owns Public Bank, is also owning one of the most expensive banks in the world.
Yeah, price to book at 3.2 times. So, if you want quality, it's never going to be cheap. I think there's also some questions about Wee Ee Cheong's future and succession planning. He admitted that in the future, the bank might actually be run by outsiders. He's already the third generation. And he said that when he was growing up, it was assumed that automatically he would run the bank like an arranged marriage. But things have indeed changed.
A lot of stories on UOB. But, the other banks, if we look at them, DBS, they they are going to expand in China's Greater Bay Area. So a lot of things are happening there, which connects Hong Kong to other major coastal cities in the mainland, you know, to form new technology and economic hub. As you mentioned, it's happening a lot on the virtual banking aspect of things. The landscape has changed.
And we spoke about billionaires in the banking sector. Let's move to Thailand, the billionaire of the consumer sector. And I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name. I just call him Mr. Charyon. He's the richest man in Thailand. He added about $2.5 billion to his fortune. Now he's worth about $13.5 billion. This is the guy who owns Thai Beverage.
I like the way you call him the guy, the billionaire guy, Julian.
The billionaire guy.
Well, he owns Thai Bev, which in turn also owns FNN. Yes, our very own FNN Malaysia, but of course the bigger listed companies in Singapore. It also owns all the FNN properties. So yes, he's truly in the league of the billionaires. Now, he stepped up Starbucks local operations in Thailand to cement his group's position as the consumer sector titan in this region, actually. His net worth has risen to $13.4 billion.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, this is part of his strategy of sort of taking his empire beyond the alcoholic beverages, beer and whiskey in Southeast Asia, which is the second biggest economy, Southeast Asia's second biggest economy. And also, he's planning to expand his alcoholic beverages sector in Myanmar as well as Vietnam.
Yeah, I think the consumer sector is a very valuable sector, especially if you're a billionaire and you don't know where else to put your money into. It's a kind of annuity business that you can rely on over the long term, right? To capture consumption needs. Everyone wants their cuppa every day, and everyone wants to have a bottle of beer or something, and the soft drink. So, Xiaoning, this is a pretty good sector to get in over the long term, and not only for billionaires, but also for normal investors, for fund managers. This is a portfolio stabilizer. Right.
Yes, generally stocks. Consumers yeah. are seen as staples. In the last few years, however, we have seen yields come down because actually, there's a demand for yield. And if you just look at the share prices of consumer goods like FNN and Nestle, they have been gradually rising over the years. So the yields actually compressed to less than 4%, if I'm not wrong, even lower for Nestle, which is in 124 ringgit at this current juncture. But definitely it's a business that most people want to be in because, like you say, it's consistent earnings. Cash flow generation is very positive. And the big thing about it is how do you manage your costs and create market share?
Okay, we'll also be talking about Aeon slightly after break. And coming up also is a look at the drama that's happening in UMNO right now because there is a power struggle going on, as if we didn't know that already. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.